On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, before we begin this episode, I just want to remind you that this is part two of our speed training group discussion. If you haven't checked out part one yet, I would strongly recommend it. It's a longer episode. It's over an hour, but there is a ton of really, really good information to take away from that one. Additionally, I just want to give another shout out to all the sponsors of the podcast, Momentous, Clean Athlete, Active Pure, Direct Fitness Solutions, Woodway, and Garden of Life are all all-star sponsors for both this episode, the previous episode, and our virtual clinic coming up on October 7th. So thank you again to those sponsors. With that being said, let's get into the episode. Guys, tons of good stuff here. One of the big things that keeps coming to mind when you guys are talking is just, for me, speed is actually measured in the game. When you look at stats and whatnot online, there is actually like how fast a guy runs from home to first, like how fast he covers a double, what his max speed is, what his average speed is in a game. And like you guys had mentioned, there's no stats on running with a barbell on their back or how much they squatted when they got to second base or how much they deadlifted at home plate before a home run. Like the values in the weight room are very important. And I am a big weight room guy, as everybody knows. But as you guys have all mentioned, speed is actually measured in the game. And if you can improve somebody's speed, then they are like, there's tangible results there. Like if a guy squats 500 and then you get him to 550, well, that's not going to be on his baseball card. That's not going to be on his baseball stats. That's the scouts aren't looking at that, but scouts are looking at speed. And you guys have alluded to it. If you can make a guy faster, you can make him more efficient. He's going to play longer and he's going to get more money. And I think the point of the guys being fast versus getting faster, like there are those guys that are the freaks, right? That they just are incredible runners. Like, I mean, not in baseball, but a Tyreek Hill type. I've come back to him again. Like just watching him run is magnificent. We went to Altus in Phoenix a couple of years ago, and watching their runners are just, it's unbelievable. Like people that have hit that type of genetic ceiling who have those efficient mechanics and everything, but you can make anybody faster than what they currently are now. And especially in baseball, like we've talked about, there's some that are uncoordinated. There's some that aren't strong. There's some that aren't efficient, and they're going to ask every single year in spring training. I have a handful of guys that come to me. Hey, can you get me faster? Hey, can you show me some drills? Hey, can you do me this during the season? Hey, what was my home the first time? Hey, how do I look running down the line? Like, they're going to ask, and so we need to be able to understand that. And so I'm interested where you guys go to continue learning about speed. We've brought up Altus. We've brought up some names. Where are you guys going to continue educating yourselves? Because like we've said, this is a huge part of coaching, and it's a part that honestly gets overlooked by way too many strength and conditioning coaches. And in our setting in pro ball, this can be a game changer for a lot of strength coaches to understand speed training and speed mechanics and all that. So where are you guys going to keep that sword sharp?
This is like every Exos 10-second difference. Every strength coach should have done this already. Every strength coach should take this course. To me, it's the best course that's out there that's available. Again, like I was lucky enough. I know Logan, you probably know him really well with Nick Winkleman coming here. He was actually here for 3 days. He hit us. He talked about obviously like external cueing for sprinting and external cueing is obviously the top notch thing for improving that from a cue standpoint. So I think the 10-second difference, Exos. Do it. Like I said, Derek Hansen, he's got a website and a running mechanics course, but he also has a website that he has like start mechanics on that is a awesome resource. He's got a couple lectures on there. And then I'll just hit my third one right here, Lauren Landau. Yeah, he makes sprinting incredibly simple to understand for sport coaches, for performance coaches. Again, those three right there, Hansen, Landau, and Exos, for strength and conditioning coaches, they just make it as simple as possible. So that'd be my three.
For me, I actually just started the Altus Foundation course, so starting to get into that. But usually anything that Carl Vau posts, he's pretty well-known track and field coach. He usually runs Simply Faster also, which is another online resource that I really enjoy diving into. I've read Charlie Francis, and then Lee Taft is another one that I like to follow on Twitter and just kind of see what he posts every now and then. So those would be my go-to resources.
Yeah, definitely hit up Athletes Acceleration. Lee Taft has like so many resources on there, man. Like that's a heavy hitter speed website, man. Athletes Acceleration, that's huge.
Yep.
Yeah, similar to the other guys, like Exos, I interned out there with them, which is kind of where I got my start. So I don't know Winkleman quite as well. Brent Calloway is who I worked with a ton when I was out there. We actually brought him in to do a camp with our guys this year. It was awesome. And he's a mentor for me. So being able to pick his brain all the time is obviously super helpful. So I think to me, like having a personal relationship with somebody that is good at this stuff is massive. Because then you can ask your individual questions and get some answers. But I think you're spot on. I think Exos has some great stuff. Altus, I've been out to as well. Outstanding. I mean, if you ever talk to Dan Paff, like, get ready to have a thesaurus and Google next to you, because I think we were three words into a conversation and he started talking to me about fluid dynamics in the body based off foot contact. And I was like, listen, man, like, I'm working on A-skips right now. So we need to dumb it down for me. So, I mean, just wealth of knowledge there. I mean, Stu McMillan's with him as well. He's awesome.
He's great. Yeah.
World Speed Summit. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. It's like it's an online like conference kind of thing that has been done for, I think they've had seven of them now, that I've watched a ton of videos from that stuff. Really cool, especially if you're in quarantine. You can do that anytime. You basically buy access to each of the different World Speed Summits, and it's got a ton of information. It's not all sprinting. Some of it's weight room stuff. Some of it's, you know, they have all kinds of speakers. So that was actually really, really cool. Simply Faster got mentioned. Is great articles on there. If you roll around, just find one that's interesting, read it. This might sound stupid. I don't know. I spend a ton of time finding like random little articles or try to think what the word is, but like little, like just images that have data on them, you know, stuff that's just like really, really simple that I'll look through. I think I've got about 150 pages printed out right now that I'm going through just for myself learning. You know, I'll find some of them, I'll print them out, I'll read through it, and I'm like, it's the dumbest thing I've ever found. And then I'll find some that are, you know, absolutely awesome, have a little tidbit in it that's really cool. So that to me has been a way to continue my learning as well. The point that I would bring up about that is, you know, you're going to get, if you really get into this stuff, you can find as much information as you want. And it's an overwhelming amount of information that is out there. But you have to contextualize what is valuable for you in your setting. If you really read into it, you're going to find people that are like, dude, heavy sleds, the way to go. You have to use them all the time. And then you're going to find people that are like, sleds are the worst invention that's ever been made and you should never touch them. So you got to an extent, develop your own philosophy. What's feasible for you? What works for you? What can you do with your athletes? And what do you believe in? And start to work off of that, because I know we run into issues with it with sport coaches, and as strength coaches, you run into it with everybody, right? Everybody saw an article on Instagram and everybody knows what they need to do now. It's the same kind of thing when you get into speed. Don't be the guy that sees one article and is like, this is what we got to do. I'm all in. Make sure you have a way to filter it, run it by somebody, you know, until you can kind of develop your own filter of what matters, what's important, what am I pulling out you know, you may read a whole article and not actually take anything from the article, but the way a guy said something may help you with what you were thinking about before. So developing that filter and that eye for how to intake that material. I think you're safe with a lot of the guys that were mentioned. You know, they have such good stuff that's really kind of withstood the test of time and critics. But you can get deep in the weeds. So making sure that you're giving yourself an opportunity to evaluate the information you're receiving too.
Yeah, all of that makes sense. And all of those names that you guys mentioned are all people that I've read up with myself. But I think going back to one of the things we talked about on the last point is just trying things for yourself goes a long way for me. I think part of the reason drills work or don't work is how effectively you give them to athletes and how well they understand it. And sometimes you have to demo a drill. And if you don't understand how to demo the drill and you look like an asshole doing it, one, you're going to get laughed at. And two, it's probably not going to be done effectively by your athletes, not going to be taken seriously. So in addition to all the reading and the listening that we do, we still can't forget that being in the trenches and actually doing things ourselves really does have value. And then we talked about also like filming yourself or having somebody watch your sprints and giving you feedback can help you in your own programming, which will help you program for those guys. So for us, we have a guy on staff who interned at Altus in the off season. He's got a track background. He's very well versed in track and field and in sprinting. And what makes him different is he has time in professional baseball. So going off of Logan's point, like sometimes things that apply elsewhere don't necessarily apply to your situation. But for me, like I can talk to him because he knows our situation. He knows the travel. He knows the ages that we're working with, the cultures we're working with, and how we can help influence their efficiency, their sprint mechanics, all that stuff. So selfishly, I have that guy in my back pocket. Anytime I want to talk shop with him, I'm going to give him a call or a text and really challenge his thoughts with the hope that he challenges me as well. And honestly, this talk has been the same for me. I've got pages of notes written down just listening to you guys talk. And for anybody who's in pro ball, it just makes sense to hear other people in pro ball talk about what they're doing because our situation is so unique. It's been brought up hundreds of times on the podcast of how different our travel, our schedule, our sleeping, all of that stuff is different for us compared to other people. And so like Logan said, maybe sleds are the best thing in the world in somebody's situation and maybe in somebody else's it's the worst. Like for us, for me, it makes sense to talk about this stuff with people who are in a similar situation to what I'm in terms of all the stuff that I do at the affiliate, the spring training, the off season. So for me, this is awesome to talk with you guys. And I encourage anybody else that's listening to talk to you guys because it just makes sense to have that conversation. And before I get you guys off and we got rolling pretty good on the last one, I do want to talk about one more thing. I don't care if it takes another hour. We've kind of alluded to it a couple times, but acceleration versus top end speed. It seems like all you guys are pretty in the boat on acceleration being incredibly valuable in baseball. And I just want to dig into that a little bit more before I have you guys go and maybe some questions that I might have for you guys get answered. But just how much of each are you doing? I know we've talked about like return to play and everything. Is there any time you're doing max speed stuff? Is it year round? You're just fluctuating between more emphasis on one versus the other? Are you cutting some out altogether at certain points? I just want to dive into that acceleration versus top end speed and how you guys are kind of programming and looking at that through that lens.
I'm generally doing both throughout the season. And then, you know, maybe after All-Star break or a little bit past that, I'm probably going to cut that off just because or the max effort aspect of it. And my rationale is they've already done, you know, the majority of their season. That's when you start seeing guys breaking down and, you know, their effort level is there. So you just try and kind of accommodate to that. Maybe we'll try and throw in, you know, maybe one max effort like every 2 weeks. And usually I'll make a game out of it, you know, just so it's fun for them. And it kind of gets their mind off of the, you know, training aspect of everything. But usually I'm sticking with accelerations just to keep them moving. And, you know, not have any, you know, incidents where, you know, we might strain a hamstring or something like that. So more of a cautious approach, I guess.
I guess, so my progression would be for max velocity. So your early off season GPP phase, my max velocity would come from my drill work. So Logan, you talked about ankle run, shin run, knee run, straight leg shuffles and straight leg bounce. So that would be my technique work, wall drills included. My application for early off season would be tempo runs because it's sub max and you're building capacity again within the hamstring. Once they've kind of done that, once you get into the SPP phase, that's when I would start again hammering the mechanics with my dribble series and with my straight leg series. And then I would move into some like buildups. So 20-yard buildup into like an ankle sprint. It could be a 20-yard buildup, 20-yard sprint, or however you want to do it. I would start there and then maybe build in some like easy, fast easies. Again, that SPP phase. And then kind of leading that in more of the base running. Then that would be my max velocity work. I guess that would be more preseason or a spring training. Again, hitting the technique, let my base running, my curvilinear runs, let that be my max velocity work. And then in season, really what is our max velocity work? It really is before the game. You know, your five sprints or however many sprints that guy's going to do, building up, and then let that, maybe those last two sprints, that's my max velocity work right there.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right on with you there. I think, you know, for me, acceleration is the foundation. So I'm starting there, I'm building off of that, and that's going to be maintained. Now, that doesn't mean throughout the season that the volume doesn't change. We may decrease the volume as the season goes on. You know, your goal is to have guys playing at the highest ability every day. So we are not going to blast them with acceleration work every day, especially second half of the season. That volume will be pulled back. But a lot of times if that high intensity volume is pulled back, we may do some extra drill work in there instead. So that'll stay. I agree with your progression for the top end stuff. We're going to go through, you know, the thing to consider is most of these guys are always conditioning in one way, shape or form. So that is in effect a slow top speed. So you're essentially saying that you're vertical when you're running. So you're going to have some hamstring activation. That's how I would start with some tempo run type stuff, and then go into some buildups before we start going into, you know, a buildup into like a flying 10 or 20. I don't ever really take them past a flying 20. You know, for us in sport, these guys are not going to run at top speed in a game. They're going to have to do something, whether it is hit a base, change direction, make a play. They're going to have to do something that is going to prevent them from reaching their true top speed. Now, they'll have an in-game top speed that will not be their actual top speed. So whenever we're training it, we're going to try and push past whatever that game's going to be. I think pregame, that's awesome. I hadn't thought of that. That's a great time to knock out, like you said, maybe two reps. Doesn't need to be anything insane because it, you know, once you get second half of the season, you're still mechanically trying to make sure that they're aware of the proper positions and they're getting in the proper positions and that you're effectively trying to improve their technique when they do run in a game. But your real goal there, for me at least, is just maintaining some hamstring health, right? We just want to keep a little bit of stress on the hamstrings from a high-end speed perspective, so that they're able to continue to have some volume there, just for more of a protective mechanism. Now, what got brought up that I think is interesting, and Adam, you mentioned this, curvilinear running. You can work on some top end speed stuff with curvilinear running. The interesting thing about curvilinear stuff is that it's almost its own realm, right? So you have acceleration, you potentially throw lateral acceleration into there as a realm. You could separate those if you really wanted to, if you're looking at, you know, crossover drop step argument. You have shuffle stuff, you have change of direction, which is arguably different than agility. You have deceleration, which we didn't even get into today. And then curvilinear running, because you're at an angle, the force vectors are different. Your loads on your hips are different. The way gravity affects you is different. So arguably you could add curvilinear running as a whole nother day to your guys. Just remembering that in baseball, our guys run curvilinear. It happens every single day, especially when they run base paths. So realizing that, you know, there's a whole nother aspect there that, you know, like I said, you can get as deep into the weeds in this stuff as you want to. But that's another variable that's easy to add in. If guys are getting real bored, have them run some curves. You can work.
Adam, how do you guys program curve runs actually?
So we haven't done a ton with them. We use them mostly for rehab, bringing guys back. The thing that becomes interesting is based off the injured leg, especially if it's a leg injury, depending on which way you have them run, you can place more or less load on the injured leg. You also have different frequencies based off of which leg's taking more steps, which leg is taking longer steps. So if you're running a curve, your outside leg is going to have a longer stride than your inside leg in order for you to be able to run that turn. You're going to have higher forces on your inside leg because you're driving down on top of that leg with more force based off your lean. So it's something that we're starting to push toward. Again, like I said, our foundation is linear acceleration. We then progress to lateral acceleration, then to top end speed. Curvilinear running would be after that. So we really haven't progressed too many guys to a full program of that yet. But that's something that I think is out there, and it's an area that should probably be explored a little further in baseball speed.
Yeah, I would say for our progression, it's really starting off with moving those tempo runs from straightaway to now those tempo runs are going to be more arc runs. So that's my curvilinear progression, is moving from there to, all right, like that's going to be our tempo work. And then can we increase that intensity now as we're getting closer to the season? So it'd be like the last phase, hard curvilinear runs, more in that arc from first to third. You know, maybe have some the circle pipes with, you know, getting guys running around there. We're able to do that during the reading as our end progression. That's kind of how we do it. Really, really simple.
I think a great way to start, guys, too, is serpentine runs. It's relatively easy to set up. You just set up a cone line. Guys run in and out of the cones. That's going to give you kind of the start of that curvilinear feel for guys. It's a cool way to build guys up before you start getting them into an actual arc run.
Like an S run maybe as well. Yep. So, yeah, just sort them through.
We've done arc runs before. I was just curious on how you guys programmed it. I know our rehab guys do it. Specifically, I don't know, because we have a dedicated strength coach for just rehab. So it's just him in the background. I was just curious about that.
Yeah, for us, we do we call them mini poles. So basically they just run on the edge of the grass dirt junction. And that's basically a progression before they start base running, usually pretty early in spring training. And then any like return to play guys, they'll do that before they do their true base running. But a lot of that, the curved running honestly comes from our base running coordinator. So it's gotten to the point where they'll set up like specific cones out on the bases to set curve angles, or even have cones out in the outfield for specific drills that they're doing if we're doing like station work or whatever. But one of the big things for us, and I'm assuming it's probably the same for you guys, is the communication between our base running coordinator and our strength staff is pretty strong. It's almost, I think, probably daily that our jefe has a conversation with the base running jefe, and they just set the volume guidelines for the week, and hey, we're going to have a harder base running day this week, so maybe a lighter day for the strength side, or hey, we want you to hit them with some more speed work on this day because they're not going to be doing base running. Here's kind of the general guidelines for how the week's going to look, how the progression is going to look. And then we kind of differentiate like who's going to take the lead. There is always a strength coach on the field, or two or five, depending on who's available, just to keep an eye on the drills we're doing. And it's kind of a collective discussion point versus like the base running coordinators running drills without us knowing, or us running drills without them knowing. And like I said, I'm sure it's similar for you guys as well.
I think that's a critical point from a buy-in perspective. If you have your base running coordinator or outfield, infield coordinators as well involved and bought in to whatever you're doing from a speed sprint training perspective. And even if, you know, we've talked to our guys about being there at stretch, if they want to hit the guys with something at the end of stretch about how this carries over, and it kind of, it helps with our flow onto the field out of stretch. It also helps with our buy-in with guys of, if the sport coaches deem this extremely important and it's not just the strength staff saying it, your level of buy-in increases immediately. So that, I think that's a huge point right there is again, we were talking about at the beginning, you know, do you need to do it? If more than one group in your organization say yes, you have a heart, like you have a better time implementing it everywhere than you do if you're the only group that thinks you need it. So I think that backup is massive.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And before I get you guys off, I know we've been talking about a lot of different stuff. I just want to hear closing thoughts from all of you guys, maybe just a couple big takeaways that anybody listening to this, if they fell asleep or fast forwarded or whatever, if they only listen to this part, what are the big takeaways that you want them to remember from this episode?
All right, I'll go first. I would say, obviously, one that we hit on, find a resource, learn basic running mechanics, basic running drills. The second would be knowing how to cue, how to fix specific things. What are your cues? Again, I prefer external cues over internal. That's going to be the easiest for our guys. How to cue, and then just from there, how to progress. I think if you can hammer those three things and keep it, again, as simple as you can, do not try to overcomplicate it. Do not, don't start with alphas. Don't start with the most advanced. Go simple. Like guys like, you know, I keep hammering them, but, you know, Derek Hansen, Lauren Landau, or Exos, those guys are going to keep it really, really basic, really simple. Start there and then do it. Apply it to yourself. Go out to a field by yourself. You don't want anybody else to see you doing it. That's fine. You got to do it. You got to try it out. You got to own it. And then have, you know, if you could find somebody like you guys were just saying, somebody that can critique or talk shop with, like in Callaway, like your buddy who ran track, like you got to talk with those people, but you got to do it. And then you'll be able to apply it and increase. What's the word? Increase your value as a strength coach. You gotta want to increase your value. And this right here, this is it. This is how you do it.
For me, it was making sure we're communicating with our athletes so that not only they understand what we want, but they also we can understand what their concerns are and how they feel. The second thing was, I think, a point, understand that they're going to dictate the pace of your progression, whether you need to regress them or progress them even faster. And then the third thing is just education and constantly looking for resources to learn from. Building off what Adam said, obviously don't start with the most advanced thing possible. Just keep it simple and, you know, communicate with others and learn from other people. And then build your wealth of knowledge from there.
I'm going to be very similar to everybody else on that one. I think priority one is you've got to go out and you've got to learn. Again, start simple, keep it simple, especially, I mean, even down to your athletes, keep it simple for your athletes. It makes it much better that way. Two has got to be practice. You got to try it on yourself. There's also nothing more powerful for your athletes than a really good demo. If you can do it, it's going to sell more to them than anything else. So practicing yourself. And then I think third, get started with your athletes, start doing it. In order to teach somebody, you just have to know more about it than they do. So as long as you've got that covered, then you can get going. And then I think that third one helps you develop an eye. You got to watch people sprint, whether it's video of yourself doing it, it's your video of your athletes doing it, it's your athletes during the reps. And it just takes time. I remember my first day at Exos talking to Brent about, I can't see anything when they're running. I just see a blur and I got nothing. And he's like, dude, you're going to have to watch hundreds of thousands of reps. And now I can see some things, you know, I mean, you watch Dan Paff do it and then it's a different world of what he sees, but I can see some things at speed now. So it just takes time. You got to learn, you got to practice, and then you've got to implement.
Yeah. For me, those all make sense. And the big one is, number one, you don't want your first time doing a drill being in front of your athletes. That's just that's setting yourself up for failure. And then watching a lot of reps, like you guys all brought up, is, you know, in the weight room, we can pick things out like nobody's business because we've seen thousands and thousands of squats. We've probably watched videos of our own squats and critiqued them and had other people critique them. And I think if we take that same mindset into speed training, it's going to make us all better. So I appreciate all of you guys coming on, spending a really, really long time with me and sharing a ton of good information. And hopefully now you are in the network for other people to reach out to. We talked about, you know, Dan Paff and all of those guys, but hopefully you guys are those people for some other coaches in baseball. And obviously I'm going to reach out to you guys with a ton of questions now because I feel like we've reached that point. So no, I appreciate you guys coming on and we'll be talking real soon.
All right, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
Good.
All right, everybody, that concludes part two of our speed training group discussion. Again, if you haven't checked out part one, I would strongly recommend doing that. And then, you know, the overall arching theme from these two episodes really for me were just to learn from others who have done it before you, practice all the drills that you learn, and then implement what you can within your given situation. I think those are the three biggest takeaways from both of these episodes with these guys. I really hope that all of you would reach out to these three, especially if you're in pro ball, just to talk some speed training, talk some shop with the guys. So again, thank you to Logan, Adam, and Jordan for coming on and speaking with me and giving me and giving all of us a ton of really good information on speed training and not really holding anything back. Additionally, I just want to say thank you again to our sponsors one more time. Momentous, Clean Athlete, Active Pure, Direct Fitness Solutions, Woodway, and Garden of Life. We really appreciate your support of both the podcast and the virtual clinic coming up on October 7th. Again, if you haven't signed up yet, you still have time. Sign up on the NSCA website, on the PBSCCS website. Check us out on Instagram for more details. It's going to be a really, really good event. And with that being said, we'll talk to you again on the next episode.